Hello once again, and welcome to our weekly installment of Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. If you've tuned in before, you know our motto, the best is yet to come. We defy the notion that at age 40, for that matter at age 50, your crowning achievements are all behind you. In fact, middle age can be the prime time of life. This week we will discuss a topic that sounds very morbid, but in fact it's just the opposite. Why you should sit down today and write your own obituary. In fact, you are writing a eulogy not to prepare yourself for an untimely death, but to awaken to your full potential for the second half of life, those days, months, and years yet to come. Well, as we all know, regardless of our age today, none of us knows precisely how many days, months, and years we have left. As our guest today will emphasize, the key is to live out our lives with joy, love, and abundance, to live in the presence, and to make the most of our all-too-brief sojourn on Earth. As he so aptly presents the challenge, do you want to die with mournful regrets or with a smile upon your face? In fact, the most common regrets of those in the final moments of life are not over what they did in the past, but over things they did not do. This very day, please make yourself a solemn pledge. On my deathbed, I will not mourn over chances not taken, opportunities not seized. What if only, and I could have been. Our guest today is Steve Michaels, author of the new book, How to Die with a Smile on Your Face, and the two CD set, The Top 10 Secrets of How to Die with a Smile on Your Face. Steve Michaels is also a certified master hypnotherapist, an entrepreneur, and an award-winning photographer. He is renowned for his three-day Dying to Live seminars and has appeared as a guest on national TV, including Fox News, CBS, and MTV. We are highly honored to have him appear with us today. Hello, Steve, and welcome to the program.
Hi, Roy. How are you doing today?
Oh, pretty well, thank you.
Good.
Let's begin by asking why a listener will benefit from writing his or her own obituary.
Well, I went through a process where I sent off a photograph of myself to a gentleman named John of God down in Brazil. A few of the people here in Montana were doing that, so I thought, oh, what the heck? So I sent off this photo, this photograph, and he goes into a trance, and if he writes or puts an X on your photograph, it means that, you know, you've got something that needs to be attended to, you know, either psychically or physically.
That's very.
And it was like a Friday afternoon. My wife had left to visit her folks in California. My secretary was gone, and I got the mail and went through and opened up this envelope, and here was a picture of myself with this big red X on it.
And it was the spot.
Yeah, it was, you know, X marks the spot. It was like a death sentence or an MRI for my soul.
Ooh,
saying,
wow.
You know, gee, something is wrong. And at the time I was smoking pot and drinking alcohol, and I said, okay, what do I want to do about this? So I took the beer up the road to a neighbor and put it out by his mailbox, some nice cold Coronas, and I went and flushed all the pot down the toilet. And I just buried my dog a few months before that, so I went across the creek and up the hill to where the dog was buried, and I wept and said, okay, God, I need some help. So after I'd cried and wiped my tears, I came back down to the house, and I'm sitting here at my desk and said, okay, now what do I do now? And the thought of writing my obituary, I don't know where it came from, but you know, sometimes when you open yourself up, it just kind of came through to write my obituary. So I started writing it, and at the end I put, and his death was alcohol-related.
Huh.
The more I looked at that, the more it upset me that, God, here I am, you know, in my early 50s or mid-50s,
yeah.
And I'm already dead. I'm already dying. And I thought, I don't want to die this way. I want to write a book, and I want to help people, and I want to become prosperous and successful and do all the things that I want to do. And so I said, well, I'm going to rewrite my obituary. So I rewrote it. And, you know, Steve's a good guy, and he did this, and he did that, and he finished a book, and he helped people. And the more I wrote, the more empowered I became and thought, okay, this is a goal. This is something It's almost like taking a blackboard and drawing a line across it, yeah, and saying from 0 to like 110. And then halfway through say, okay, where am I? And you put a little dot on the line and you say, okay, to the left is, you know, I went to grammar school and high school and I got married and I got a job and blah, blah, blah. And now here I am and I've got another 30, 40, 50 years left. What do I do from here on? You know, it seems like once you get out of school, there's nobody there to prod you on. You know, your parents aren't saying, well, you're going to go to college, or are you going to get married, are you going to do this? It's like you're on your own, you know, it's you and your spouse. And if you're not real motivated, or if you're both there, well, we're retired now, so we're going to play golf and we're going to go fishing. And, you know, you can only play so many holes of golf before, okay, what's next in life?
Yeah, that's for sure.
So the obituary really wasn't something morbid. It was like an assessment of, here's where I am and here's where I want to go. I've got 30 years or 40 years. What do I want to do with the rest of my life? That's the reason for writing the obituary.
That's exactly what I've suggested doing in the book I wrote, is write an obituary concentrating not on what you've done up to now, but on what you intend to do, and then visualize and live vicariously what those experiences will feel like when you accomplish all those things you want to accomplish, helping others and contributing and doing what you really should have been doing all along.
Well, you know, we all learn to mature and we all grow at different stages. And I think the media, you know, teaches us that, you know, you got to get the education, you got to have the two-car garage, you got to have the house with the fence and have the kids. And I never really subscribed to any of that. When I was born and brought up back in Vermont, and my father and I worked at GE. You know, he worked in the tool room, and I was assembling, parts for a machine. And so my dad said, well, Steve, you know, you can work upstairs and be in the air conditioning, you know, go to Vermont Tech and become an engineer.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, Dad. So I worked, you know, all day long, and then at nighttime I walked to work and sold shoes. So I was working from 7:30 in the morning till 10 at night, and saved up all the money myself. Went to Vermont Tech, and about, you know, a month and a half into it, the professor says, "Well, when we get through with this, you'll be able to fix this radio." And I thought to myself, "I don't want to fix the radio. I hate fixing radios. I want to be on the radio."
Yeah.
So I worked at the radio. I worked as a disc jockey at the little radio station there in Vermont Tech, and I had a ball. And three months into it, I said, you know, I don't want to do this. There's someday my dad's going to be gone, and I'm going to look back at my life and say, okay, did I want to be an engineer for my dad, or do I want to be a disc jockey on the radio for myself?
Yeah, that's right.
So I packed up, and I moved from Vermont to Eugene, Oregon, and got on the radio and started living my life. And that was one of the prime things of my life, is do what you love and the money or the happiness will follow. Because I'm 63 now, and I look back on my life and, God, I've got a little flying machine. I've got a trout pond. I built a hobbit house up on the hill. I mean, I've done things that weren't suggested by the typical media. You know, I just said, what do I want to do? What would make me happy? How can I help people? You know, my wife and I have this thing called $100. It's our $100 club. You know, we'll go somewhere and we'll see a waitress that's really having a hard time or having a bad day, or maybe she's the only one in the restaurant because the other waitress didn't show up, and we'll leave her a $100 tip.
Oh, wow.
And I remember one time we did that, and we tried to get out of there so she wouldn't see it, and we're in the car and we're starting to back up, and she comes running out with this $100 in her hand. She's waving it, you know, saying, oh, sir, you left this behind. I said, no, that's a tip for you. You really deserve it.
Yeah.
And she went back in, and she's showing, you know, the cook, you know, oh, my God, look, I got a $100 tip. You know, it's the biggest tip I ever got. And, we drove away, and it puts a real good feeling in your heart and in your stomach, you know, that you help somebody out. And
it definitely does.
This is one of the things that we try to do to help other people, you know.
You're almost like the secret millionaire.
Well, I've done some things that, I mean, I think, you know, I really believe in what goes around comes around.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my youth, we had cabbage night back in Vermont. We would go out, and it's the night before Halloween, and, you know, throw pumpkins and wax windows and all that stuff. And, you know, it comes back around. And when I was in my 20s, my first mentor was saying, you know, that everything that happens to you, you choose. So if you go out and do something bad or negative to somebody, it'll come back to you. You know, eventually it'll come back to you. It's a law, just like the law of gravity. So
well,
I said, okay, if that's the case, then I'll start doing good things. You know, and it took a while to balance out the bank account. You know, after a while, you know, you're doing so many bad things, and then all of a sudden you, okay, we're leveling out in the bank of tithing, you know, positive and negative, you know,
well,
karma.
What is the one secret a listener can do today to dramatically turn his or her life around? I noticed you mentioned one secret.
One secret I would say, just what I just mentioned, is that if you take a baseline and say everything that happens to you, you choose.
Yeah.
That would be a baseline. And as I say, when I talked to my first mentor, I must have gone a year and a half back and forth with him. Well, what about if somebody rear-ends me? Did I choose that? And what if somebody, hits my car intentionally? Did I choose that? You know, and I would keep going on and on and on. And he says, well, you got to take into account karma, that what you put out, you get back. It may not come back from the same person. It may come back from someone else. And the other thing, I don't know if your listeners are into this, but you have to look at reincarnation.
Yeah.
That everything that happens to you in this life, you know, may not be coming from this life. It may have come from a past life.
Well, we may not choose something, but we can certainly choose how we react to whatever happens as well. Like if somebody rear-ends me, I can have a big hissy and run out and jump and say, you idiot, why can't you watch where you're driving? Or I can be pleasant to the guy and make the best of a bad circumstance. Nicely exchange insurance cards and all that kind of thing without having a big scene.
I agree.
Well, please summarize for us your success and happiness formula. I know you mentioned that.
Success and happiness formula. I guess I would have to say that it was do what you love and your passion or your happiness will follow.
Yeah, very definitely.
I think happiness comes from within, not from without. So, again, ask yourself, what is it that I enjoy the most? And then set your sights and your goals on then doing that.
Yeah, on your website, you know? I was very impressed and can thoroughly relate to three statements that you quoted there on the website. The first one, you quote Marshall Goldsmith, the great Western disease is, I'll be happy when... Like when the kids are grown, when I find a new job, when I get a BMW, when the economy improves, whatever. And then he goes on to state, happiness is not out there, it's in here. Happiness is not next week, it's now. And I think those two statements really summarize so much what everyone so often tends to put off or make excuses for being unhappy, which doesn't really make any sense at all. And the wind never seems to get here, and when if it does, then it's replaced by a new wind.
Right.
So many people go through that. Another statement you make on your website, which I would totally agree with you, the common excuse cited is, I'm stuck. I'm stuck in my job, or I'm stuck in my marriage, or because of the kids, et cetera, et cetera. And then you point out that the change needed has much more to do with what's inside and not on the particulars of your situation, and that you can become CEO of you, and if you have a positive outlook and solid intentions for today and tomorrow, you can appreciate your blessings and enjoy daily living in a whole new way. And I certainly think that kind of summarizes the challenge out there as well.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing I liked about that was on your website was when you said happiness in life isn't all about money, 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 and that the irony is that money often comes to you once you follow your bliss, as you put it.
Right.
And I think that's so true that my contention is that the real benefit of wealth is the freedom to choose, to not have to worry about where the next paycheck is coming from, but to choose what you really want to do with the rest of your life, and without first winning the lottery. It's possible to get that kind of a lottery winner's mentality if you have a positive outlook on who's in control and what you really want out of life. So all those items on the website really impressed me.
Well, thank you. I mean, I've lived through a lot of these. You know, I was seven kids in the family, and we were a poor family, and I went through the hardships of not having things. And, of course, right next door was my kid that was my age. He was an only child, and he had everything.
Yeah.
So here looking at me in the face is everything I didn't have. So I thought, oh, if I was rich, I could have the best bike. And if I was rich, I could have the best girl. And if I was rich, I could do this. So I started my life out looking, I wanted to be rich. I wanted to be rich. But the more I studied and started reading the books about wealth, the power of positive thinking and Think and Grow Rich, they all had a spiritual aspect to them. That you can't just go out and go for the money, because if you do, money is going to be your downfall. You know,
and
because
then you
everything
just want
then
more
it's about
money.
everything is about money.
Then
and
you see the Warren Buffetts of the world, and you don't have enough because have a lot more.
Well, you look at Warren Buffett, and he still lives in the same house he bought like 20 years ago.
That's very true.
You know, and he wears old frumpy clothes. I remember I put on a conference down in Atlanta, and I hired Norman Vincent Peale to come speak.
Oh.
So my wife and I went to pick him up at the airport, and I remembered he got into the car, and he was very gracious, he and his wife. He had a hole in his sock.
I'll be darned.
And I looked down, and I said, my God, he's got a hole in his sock. And here I was, you know, we put up bumping and sweet. And he got up there and spoke and went around, was very gracious, and went to all the vendors of our telecommunications convention. But I think one of the most things that impressed me was that he was very down to earth.
Yeah.
And I know at the time my mom, you know, we were brought up a Catholic. My mom was, you know, was first God, and then the Pope, and then Norman Vincent Peale. And so when we were in his room, I said, would you mind calling my mom and just, you know, saying hi to her? And he said, no, not a problem. So I got her on the phone. I said, Mom, I've got somebody here who wants to say something to you. And he got on the phone and said, hi, this is Norman Vincent Peale. And oh, my God, he had to pull the phone away from his ear because she was,
oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. Praise the Lord.
I'm sure he had a hole in his sock because he was a holy man, right?
Oh, that probably is. But, I mean, just the hole in the sock. And I thought, oh, he's just a regular guy like I am. You know, he's got to put his pants on one leg at a time, and he's got problems. But, you know, his message was so eloquent of, you know, be positive all the time. Any time there's a circumstance that comes up, instead of looking at it and saying, oh, I got a flat tire, oh, I got something happen, he'd look at it and say, well, here's an opportunity for me to grow. Here's God giving me another little test to see, am I ready? Have I passed the test yet? Can I go up to the next level?
Yeah.
It's almost like we keep getting the same lessons over and over again, kind of like a spiral staircase. You know, you get tested when you're 5 years old, and when you're 18 years old, and then when you're 23, you know, and the same lesson comes around, and you look at it and say, okay, yeah, I've seen this before. You know, am I going to pass it this time, or am I going to fail like I did last time? And if so, then, you know, give me some more tools. Let me read some more books. Let me meet another mentor that can help me again, you know.
Well, you mentioned, what is it so important about being in the now, and how do you keep yourself focused on the now? I know that's a challenge for just about everyone.
That's a tough question, and that's probably been one of my hardest lessons for me to learn. Being in the now means that you're not preoccupied with the past, nor are you worried about the future.
Yeah.
In my hypnotherapy practice, 90% of the client's problems were related to the past or the future.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, we would go to York Beach, Maine. And for weeks before, I'd be so happy. Oh, we're going to go to York Beach. We're going to go have fun. And any time I was having to mow the lawns or dig a ditch, I said, oh, boy, in 2 weeks, oh, boy, in 2 days, we're going to be up in Maine. And we'd go to Maine, and I'd be happy, and you know, it was a 2-week vacation, and we'd go down and have crab or have lobsters and you know, fried clams and swim at the beach. But as I started getting toward the end of the vacation, I started getting headaches. Thinking to myself, oh, I got to go home. I got to mow the lawns. We got to kill the chickens. We got to go back to school. And I would literally bring on headaches to myself.
I so often remember being on vacations where about halfway through I'd start counting, well, I've had 7 days and I only have 7 left. And then it would get down to 9 and 5. And it's so ridiculous when you think about it. So many of my vacations.
And you look at... You know, you look at that and think to yourself, okay, if that's the way you want to run your life, then you can, I mean, you can't be in the past, you can't be in the future, you can only be right here, right now, and if you're right here, right now, gee, you know, I can smell the nice air, we've got some lilacs outside that are blooming, and I can smell those, and I can hear the little creek running outside, and the cup of coffee I've got on my desk, gee, that tastes awfully good.
Smells good, too.
It smells good. Yeah, I mean, if you're in the moment all the time right now, I listened to a series of tapes by David Hawkins. And this is a little over the top, but it was a good example of being in the now. He relates a story of a guy who's going to have his head chopped off. And he, you know, they bring him out, and it's a nice day. And he said, well, I'm okay now. I feel okay. And then he goes up the stairs, you know, to go to the guillotine. He said, well, I'm you know, walking up. I'm getting a little exercise. And then I go and I put my head on the block. And I said, well, that, you know, that feels okay. And then, boom, you're in spirit.
Yeah.
And yet when you look at the normal person, you know, that is going to have their head chopped off, there all this fear comes up and the worry and the adrenaline and, oh, I mean, this is really an extreme example. But you look at the guy who's, you know, a master or someone who is in control and says, I'm in the now, I'm in the now. I think Eckhart Tolle says it the best, that I don't know if you know of Eckhart. He, you know, he sat on a bench in a park for like a year or 2 years just trying to get himself together, what is life all about? And he said, it's always about being in the now, being in the now.
Well, that's
no past, no future.
An example of being in the now when you think about walking up the steps.
I mean, I couldn't do it. But in order to do that, I mean, people that have passed into spirit or people that have had near-death experiences, they never want to come back. You know, they experience unconditional love. They see the light. You know, and it's usually an angel or a guide saying, well, no, you need to come back for your children or you've got some things to do on the earth plane.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've got it all backwards. It's we have babies and everybody celebrates and they pass out the cigars and, you know, and here's a new life coming in. And it should be just the opposite. When we're getting ready to die, that's when you should celebrate because you've lived a whole life. You've experienced the lessons. You've chose opportunities to grow. And then when you go back into spirit, you look back on your life and say, well, gee, I was a good guy here and I was a good guy there. And I didn't learn much over there, but I did pretty good in the humility department. You know, now what am I going to do in my next life? And to get back with all the people that you've been with before. I believe that whole families and even villages reincarnate together, you know, to learn lessons. And
interesting.
And I'll look at my father and say, okay, what part do you want to play in my next life? Well, I'll be the bad guy. I'll be the kid next door that pushes your button so you can learn this lesson. You know?
On a related subject, you mentioned, tell your listeners why worry is a waste of time and actually detrimental to finding a solution to what you're probably worrying about. You know, that's a lot like living in the now, but so much of the time is spent on worrying about what might happen, and it's just so pointless. But,
Everything that you think about, you choose and create, either from a conscious or a subconscious level. So worrying is like praying for the worst. We worry because we think we don't have any control over the future. You know, and we do. You know, we can... it's almost like a double whammy, because if you're in... if you worry about the future, okay, something's going to happen. I'm going to have an interview on the radio, and I'm going to screw up, or I'm not going to know what to say, and my fears start coming up, and then I have a great interview. Well, yeah. I just wasted all those seconds or all those minutes of, gee, it's going to be a bad interview. I'm going to say something I'm going to regret. I'm going to lose my train of thought.
Very true.
And it doesn't happen, and it doesn't happen at all. So
yeah.
Why worry about something like that or anything that comes up? I'm going to take a test and I'm going to fail and get so debilitated, that you can't eat. Some people actually throw up because of just their thoughts.
Yeah.
And that ties again back into being in the now. If you're just in the now and you get on the radio interview and it flubs, so what? Well, you've learned. Maybe you'll do better the next time.
Or
if you fail the test, well, you take the test again.
Yeah.
I didn't pass the seventh grade, so the teacher made me stay back. And I, looking at it then, it was, oh, my God, all my friends are going on, and, I'm a failure. But then I looked at it, and the new group of kids that I got in with was more on the level of where I should have been.
Yeah, in hindsight, I look about when I panicked that I was going to not find a mate for life, and I'm not going to find the right job, right? Didn't get a promotion I wanted, and then looking back in hindsight, that was such a minor setback that really had nothing to do with where I am today or where I hope to be tomorrow. But how best can you first decide and then focus upon what you really want out of life and then allow what you want to become a real part of your life? I know that's what I believe is the million-dollar question for those who are seeking renewal at middle age. I know you mentioned that as one of the key things we need to focus on.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the question.
Well, I was just asking how you can first decide and then focus upon what you really want out of life, and then how do we really make what we want out of life become a real part of our lives?
Well, focus on what you enjoy doing.
Now, that's a good point.
Like when I was in college and learning to be an engineer, and they had a little radio station, and I went down and said, well, could I try out? And they said, sure, no problem. So I became a disc jockey, and I made my own commercials, and we're way in the backwoods of Vermont, and it was funny. I'd say, if you can guess what this is, it's yours. And I'd have a can of beer, and I'd bring it up from underneath, and I'd go boosh under the mic, and God, you could hear all these guys running down the stairs. I know what it is.
And
I laughed and I had fun, and I thought, God, this is something I can have fun and earn money at the same time. Isn't that unusual? I mean, isn't that something?
That's life's greatest blessing, I think, is getting paid.
Yeah, for me to make money, I had to. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, to have someone pay you to do what you want to do with the rest of your life, that's like winning life's lottery, actually.
Oh, that's the greatest. And it took me probably most of my life to get to that point. I'd sell photocopy machines, and I'd go out door to door and knock on, people's doors and come in. Do you want to buy a photocopy? No, I don't want to buy one. Do you want to buy one? No, I don't want to buy one. And God, I hated it. And at the end of the month, I'd get a check and okay, I made my commission. Then I'd start out again the next month, having to go out and do the same thing all over again. And it led me to drink. I drank a lot. Because I hated doing it. And now I haven't drank for close to 14 years. And I'm flying my little flying machine, my ultralight. I have a Hobbit house. We were interviewed on MTV and HGTV, and the New York Times came out. Here I am in Little Trout Creek, Montana, where we don't have a stoplight in the whole county, which is 180 miles long by 80 miles wide. And we have the New York Times coming in here.
That's great.
Because I did something I loved, I thought, well, this would be cool. This would be fun. And
unfortunately, we're just about out of time, but I want you to tell our listeners how they can obtain your book and the other products that you offer. I know you have a special offer there on your website, but why don't you tell listeners just how they can go about getting all that good stuff?
Okay, the website is howtodiewithasmileonyourface.com. And if you want to receive a free secret, it's livingwithasmile.com. And then you just put in your email address, and there's a free secret you can download. It's the 10th secret about being in the now. It's a 25 minute. There are stories that relate to, you know, what I've been doing and what we've been talking about in this interview. You can also buy the book on Amazon. Go to Amazon and How to Die with a Smile on Your Face, or the Top 10 Secrets of How to Die with a Smile on Your Face.
Yeah, those sound very intriguing. And in essence, in fact, Steve's message is very similar to the comprehensive strategy for renewal that's contained in my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up. It's all about you can make positive contingency plans to live another 30 to 40 years, but treat every day as if it was the last. I think that's the key suggestion that we make, and I urge you to preview my book on our website, www.middleagerenewal.com. And remember, we also offer completely free our Middle Age Renewal Training mini course. So go to the website, and it's free for the asking. Once again, what's your website, Steve?
HowToDieWithASmileOnYourFace.com.
That's pretty easy, and that's all one word with no dots or anything in it.
That's it, yes.
Okay, well, thank you so much for being a most informative guest today. And next week we'll talk about bad bosses at mid-career, how you can make the best of a difficult workplace situation. And I'm Roy Richards, your host on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. Until we talk again, have a great week, and remind yourself continually that your best days are yet to come.